And welcome back, Pocket Change listeners. Today, it is my absolute delight to welcome my friend, Matt Elson, who is a father, a husband, and an athlete in the disability bodybuilding space, as well as a marketing guy. This is a well-rounded jewel of a human, and I can't wait to dive in. Good morning or good afternoon, Matt. How are you?
Good morning, Kate. Yeah, really, really well, thanks. It's nice and sunny here in the southwest of England, so spring, summer is upon us, so it's a really good opportunity to have a chat with you today.
Absolutely. I am so grateful that we've connected. And I think you and I actually met through a joint mutual connection, and it's in our bodybuilding passion. And that is with good old Dr. Scott Stevenson with Fortitude Training.
Yeah, that's a great place to start. Yeah, it's I think it's Fortitude Training is it's certainly a fantastic community, and it's I think that's how we connected via Scott and the actual hashtag there. So it's a fantastic structure in which to kind of launch a fitness program. So I found it really, really beneficial, and I'm sure you have as well.
Oh, I ran with Scott for 2 years, doing only Fortitude Training, and I got to tell you, like, it was the best program I've ever done in my fitness career. I mean, and I've been lifting and active since about 2007, so it was a very heavy, impressionable system for me to run.
Yeah, I think it started off with I think someone recommended it to me, and you know, downloaded the ebook, and then it kind of really looking for a settled program which I could follow, you know, towards a goal of helping with my competing. And I committed to trying it for over several months. I think I started that in 2018, 2019 after competing for a year or two. I just found it a really, really good structure, and it's kind of developed from there, because he's brought out his Be Your Own Bodybuilding Coach book as well, which just delves into so many different aspects of pre-contest, post-contest, peak week. And I'm using it right now, and it's just been a treasure of information. And I met Scott briefly at a bodybuilding show, Fitness Expo, in 2018, 2019, and he's really, really good at connecting, and if you reach out to him, he's more than happy to answer questions as well. And he does lots of podcasts as well. So it's been great to kind of meet him, and it's the same, meet people like yourself who have got a bit about that kind of that same drive to go out and do bodybuilding.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, too, is that when you find your kindred spirits, it doesn't matter where they sit or where they're seated in the globe. I mean, we're a really small community in that regard. And, so that kind of, I want to talk a little bit about the bodybuilding that you participate in, because you're a competitive athlete and you've been competing for quite some time. But you compete with cerebral palsy.
Yeah, I've got cerebral palsy on my left side, and it's always been something for me when I've looked at bodybuilding shows, and it almost seemed out of reach for me when I was growing up, and even going into a gym, really, in terms of having the confidence, I think, in my late teens, early 20s, to actually even get into a gym. And It was something I had an interest in fitness in general, wanting to get myself fit. When my daughters arrived, and so I just wanted a particular goal. And just again, through the power of social media, I came across this guy in the UK, my friend Josh Goodfellow, who he has cerebral palsy, and it's kind of different structure to myself, but it was really incredible to see him. He went in an open class and competed, and he did loads and loads of shows, and again, very approachable, and just found this community. And we found there was a couple of federations in the UK who just started to put a mixed category for disabled athletes. So it's mixed men and women and mixed abilities. So whether that's cerebral palsy, limb difference, wheelchair users, and to showcase these athletes and to be able to build upon that. And so that's in a nutshell how it's all started. So reached out to Josh, spoke at length, and a few other people, and I've made some great friends within that particular space. And the bodybuilding community in general is, I've just found it such a positive space. And I know people have different experiences, but mine and a number of my friends have just had so many positive experiences because of this. And it's so nice for us as individuals to have that platform. But I've got this kind of, a lot of other people have, it's got this drive to kind of make it even bigger and more accessible. And it's kind of just grown and grown and grown from there, really.
That's so powerful. I mean, in North America, right, we have a very healthy wheelchair division. And, you know, I know one of the wheelchair pros quite well. I mean, not personally, but we know each other quite well over social media. And he competed, he won his pro card at the Amateur Olympias last year, and then went on to do the Olympia. And wow. Like, it was absolutely, like, I have goosebumps just thinking about it, because he was able-bodied until he was in a wreck. And came back from, you know, being put into a paraplegic state of life, and used bodybuilding as that crutch and that anchor to really center his life and really enable him to participate in the life as fully as he wanted to. And I just think that there's so much power in our community. I think we're a misunderstood community a lot of the time. But I think that there's so much power there when we think about the levels of inclusion that we do see across our federations.
Yeah, and it's something which it's been a great topic of discussion in terms of how we kind of the category is put together and how it could be potentially split. But the way I've found it is that when we've had a couple of federations in the UK and then in America, in North America as well, where there's a couple of federations here now, the PCA, Physical Culture Association, started in the UK, and then they've kind of branched out, and we've got different regions across the globe now, including in the US. So there's opportunities for athletes to travel internationally. And wow. Yeah, so I mean, I had the opportunity just before the pandemic, and was gonna go over and compete in Tampa, but I still hope to do that eventually. But those opportunities are there, and I think there's around about 40 shows now in the UK across two or three different federations where, you know, it's got that mixed category, and it's just a fantastic to have those opportunities. And it's not, I don't feel like I'm there just because I'm disabled, and it's like almost like an inspiration, almost like I feel like I'm there. We're there in our own right as athletes, and yeah. it is great that we've got the ability to have a platform in the disability space, because there are different challenges. And I think that's more so than the inspiration that people may see than I'm up there. It's just actually it's great that, given the challenges I may face to have to put adaptations in place in the gym, it's getting through that and still being able to go on stage. I think and that's what's appreciated, I think, when we're up there and the different journeys that we've had.
Absolutely. I think that there's an element of, and this is a bit of a provocative conversation, right? When we think about inclusion at the core of what it is people wanting to be seen and heard and be able to participate, but not to be a token participant. This is your life. This is your passion. This is something that your passion is no different than my passion. The only difference is in execution. Mm-hmm. I don't have CP. You know what I mean? And I think that really is, like you've summed it up, is that the community itself is providing the space for you to live your passion despite the things that may or may not hold you back.
Yeah, and I think that's what I get from it. I remember someone saying that, you know, you are athletes and you know, you've gone on these journeys with your own barriers and your own adaptations to put in place, but you are here in a category in your own right, and everyone in bodybuilding, has this journey to the stage, and there may be some adaptations that I have to put in place, and others find certain exercises or certain sets within their programs work better for them. And I think that as long as we have the ability to have access to that equipment, I think that's what I'm really passionate now is getting more access to a piece of equipment within the gym, which kind of increases the participation, or the ability to have a participation, I think. And I found, which found it quite daunting to go in the gym, thinking, there's only a certain amount of equipment I could use, but just through time I've managed to kind of just tweak things and adapt and find a different way and different attachments which work into my program to work different muscle areas and different muscle groups which work with my disability as opposed to against it. So but that's taken a lot of time, and I think that's where my passion lies, is certainly in the sporting space, is to look at how that can be put in place in different areas, so that more people have that opportunity. Because what we found is that it has grown hugely over, like, particularly over the last couple of years. So I think, and it's just that awareness, and you know, through social, and people will see the athletes on stage and think, oh, I can do that. I'll give that a try and get in touch. And you know, we've seen even this year already, you know, I think the season's only around about 2 months in, and there's new athletes competing week on week. And that's great to see, because hopefully by the end of the year, we've got an even bigger category to compete with.
Well, I think that's the whole point, right? Like, we want to be up there and we want to be in competition. And, you know, I'm in prep right now. And the one thing that I say to myself almost every single day is competition day isn't competition. That's a comparison round. Competition is what we do in the day to day to get to the stage. Are we doing our cardio? Are we drinking our water? Are we sleeping our sleep? Are we eating our food or not eating our food? Right. And it's, I think, you know, to have the ability to exert yourself in the gym in a meaningful way so that you can actually focus on the actual preparation for the competition, I think is a really powerful opportunity. And, you know, I've seen you with some really clever adaptations with wrist cuffs, particularly. I've seen some of your videos that you've posted, and I think it's genius, and I love the fact that you share what you share, because listen, I can't motivate you. I can't. I can inspire you. I can also create the space for motivation. And when we look at motivation, the ingredients for motivation are purpose, mastery, and autonomy. And if you have the autonomy to walk into a gym and the gym says, hey, Matt, whatever you need to be successful in your journey, hey, bud, we got you. Right? Great. You're autonomous. You've got a facility that supports you. And then you have purpose, because in your heart, the passion of bodybuilding is what drives you, and your purpose is to go up and do the best prep. The ability to pursue mastery in a meaningful way and to be able to share that with people, because like mastery is made up of a number of different things. It's made up of flow, getting into the space and being able to execute the exercises as best as we can with what mind muscle control we have, you know, whether you're developing as an athlete or whether you're a disabled athlete. The secondary is asymptote. It's uncomfortable. It's painful. We're on this constant trajectory to meet the end of a goal that is never going to be met, right? When we think of bodybuilding, we're never good enough. We always want to be bigger. We always want to be leaner. We always want to be, you know what I mean? And so
yeah, it's the development of the journey, isn't it? Yeah.
And so I look at your content and it's like, I think when I look at your content and the things that you put out, it really speaks a lot to the fact that you create and you share those ingredients for motivation, because you're not giving people the opportunity to say, no, sorry, we can't, you're not able to do that. Like, you're like, no, you're not going to tell me who Matt Elson is. I'm going to tell you who I am.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And what I would say to that is, I think there's been so many people who I've taken bits of advice from, or someone's shown me a particular way of, okay, well, this you could try this exercise without your wrists, or by using this attachment. And it may be that someone who is disabled and done that, or someone who it's just found the way of isolating a muscle. And I think that'd be amazing, because if I have problems with my dexterity or my grip, if I can take that out of the equation, but then still work the appropriate muscle group that I'm targeting, it's just that's I've got to share that, because if someone else can see that and use that, then I'm passing it forward, and the ideas that I've picked up, because everything that I've kind of that I do in realm of in sphere of bodybuilding it has been given to me by someone else. So I feel that's if I can help by do that by posting those videos, just to say, or on my blog and saying, well, I've tried this and it's worked this way. What I'm really careful not to do, though, is that I'm very, whether it's nutrition particularly, but also with targeting different exercises, is that particularly with my condition, is that this is what works well for me. I'm very hesitant to say, you should definitely try this. This will definitely work for you, because it works with my dexterity and my CP, but it's just a matter of saying, okay, I'll show it on video because this is how I've done it, and if it works well for you, then by all means try it. But obviously, get some advice from a PT or someone who knows the equipment well. I think it's always my advice in the gym. So,
well, and I think that's important too. I think it puts a layer of protection on you as well, as somebody that you're not providing like direct advice, but you're showing people the capability. And so I guess that kind of leads me down another line of questioning in terms of just your mindset and your personal resilience and your resolve, because like you're going through life, you're living a day-to-day life. You're a husband, you're a father, you've got to deal with everyday issues with little girls, with school and, report cards and whatever else comes with little tiny humans. And then on top of that, you still have to wake up and be this present person in a marketing position. And not every day is a good day. And it's really hard when you're on prep, really hard when you're on prep sometimes. But when you layer on the fact that you have all of the everyday life stuff, and then you have a disability on top of that, that may or may not facilitate those things, where does that resilience and that drive come from?
It's a good question. I mean, it's one of those where I think it's just taking every challenge and every day and everything that's presented, and to go, okay, so how can this work? So in reference to finding the time, particularly for family and work, and I try to get the balance as well as I can. So train early in the morning before they get up. On some of the days where I love taking them, I take them to school, and I've got flexible working hours if I can do, so I can make those meetings at school, which is great. And then just trying to trying to find that balance is always a challenge. I think mm-hmm. just in terms of where the certainly there's lots of challenges that have been presented in terms of the with reference to the CP, and I think it is. I think if I think of all of it once, it would become quite daunting. So, like, also becoming a parent, lots of things race my mind about, like, yeah, how am I going to hold them? Whether it's changing nappies or bath time, and it's something I kind of noted before is that, like, you know, you just take one thing at a time, practice and adapt, and. I've always had a huge amount of gratitude to how my parents brought me up, because they always found a way to help me adapt around things. So whether it was trying to we're trying different sports, it was just like, okay, he can have a go and we'll find a way around it. So I remember whether it's swimming, whether it was rugby, anything like that, it was about resilience was kind of always put in place before I could even walk, you know, and it did take me a little bit longer to walk and find me different ways, but it's just trying to find those patterns. And I think my girls just kind of see that, and I think I always had to explain it to them that I had cerebral palsy. I think they just, because they grow up and they just, that's just what, how dad is, and yeah. And hold things, or you know, and it's so they know, they see that daddy's got a small hand and daddy walks with a limp, but it's amazing because from their perspective they've just grown up with it, whereas sometimes if they introduce someone, it's obvious I have a disability, but not to them because they've grown up with just dad, that's just who dad is. So it was really interesting. I had to sit down and actually say, like, dad has a disability, which is, you know, which is different to your hand, maybe, in your leg.
Wow. And that's powerful. I mean, that in and of itself. And I mean, we do know that resilience does. It starts at life. You know, the day you're born is the day that you start to build those resiliency skills. And, you know, all the power to your parents for, you know, saying, Matt, you're just going to live a normal life despite these things, right? We'll work around them.
Yeah, and it's, I remember, like, there were certain physiotherapy exercises that were recommended to help as my body grew. It's like to keep it as subtle as it could possibly be. And I remember daily exercises, and both my parents said, "Oh, come on, Matt, you know, I know it's hard, and you know, this will be beneficial, you know, in 20 years' time." And at the time when you're younger and all you want to do is go out and play, and you've got to do these stretching exercises, and you know, it's part of that process. So that, I think that process, looking back, was something that was probably just subconsciously there, and just there is a way, and it's just trying to find that way. It might take a little bit longer, it might take a lot longer, but there is a way to try and get around things and to try and to adapt. And I know there's certain things I can't do. I probably won't be able to go into, say, surgery. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm limiting myself there. But, or, you know, I've always wanted to play the guitar, and I'm like, surely there's got to be an adaptive guitar somewhere. And, you know, and but my daughter plays guitar now, so she's living that dream through her own practice, and she's amazing at it as well. So.
That's so wonderful. So would you suggest that the pathway that you've taken, I mean, you seem like a very patient person.
I try to be, yeah. It's, I'm just saying I think there's a certain element with it where I know things are going to take a certain amount of time. And of course I chuckle because there's been countless frustrations like if I can't do something, or it's, perhaps things not good. But I think as you get older and with more experience, you think there is a possible way forward, and maybe certain things or pastimes which you're passionate about, you can help get better access or change things or be more confident. I think to actually go, mm-hmm. Could this be changed to accommodate not just me but a wider group of people. And I think that's where I think it's just experience. And I think, you know, it's difficult in my 20s to kind of work out, you know, having the confidence to speak up and to say, actually, no, this could work better for me, rather than thinking, okay, this is just how I've got to fit in somewhere. So I think as I've gotten older, I think I just had more experience and more confidence to think, actually, it is there a better way? So I think that just goes hand out with a lot of other things, really.
Well, yeah, I think really it just forces you to be a problem solver, right? Like, you're a solution type person. When you're looking at something and you're going, well, that's not going to work, what will?
Yeah. And it's like, and I always have this open mind, particularly in the gym, because going back to that briefly, it's like, even in the last couple of weeks, I found that I think, oh, maybe that'll work and such. And even like, you know, and this is like with parenting, it's like with my daughter about, she has this experience to grow into, to learn, and sometimes I have to remember that. But you know, she's young and she's going to have these experiences where she will build her own resilience, whether it's homework or certain tasks that she's doing, and she's learning that, you know, she has a particular process and practices certain things. And she gets better with time and better with practice and experience. And she's learning that. And I can see that in her eyes, thinking, oh, if I just put this together, then I will give myself an opportunity. So that's been wonderful to see as well.
Those aha moments are some of my favorite moments with parenting. You know, I think we always want such great and wonderful things for our children, and we never want them to experience without or have heartache. And I mean, that's very unrealistic if we want to raise children who are resilient. And I think that, you know, seeing those moments where they come into themselves and where they make something work that they didn't think was going to work, or they, you know, like, that is so powerful. Like, that's probably one of the most rewarding things that as a parent, I think I've experienced. And, you know, it was funny. We were, I was going to Nationals in Vancouver, and it was during the pandemic. So it was 2021. They had all these pandemic protocols in place, and I had done a show in 2020 to qualify. And it was one of the best shows I've actually ever done. Actually, it was the Van City Showdown over in New Westminster. So Ron Partlow, Rep 300, he put it on with one of the other guys out there, and it was just so great because it was all within the protocols. We were not in compromise of anything, right? So here in Canada, we had for a brief period vaccine passports. So you couldn't go on a plane, you couldn't go on a train, you couldn't go in a restaurant, you couldn't go anywhere really without a vaccine passport. The only place you could really go is the shops. And so my daughter had her vaccine, her second vaccine, to put her into the status of being able to travel via air. And I had mine early on because I was traveling for work through the whole pandemic, which is a whole different story. And so we're couple days out, we're going to go and do grad dress shopping. So we're leaving a couple days early, and we get to the airport and they have a QR code and they scan mine. Yep, you're good to go. Finish your check-in process. And then the lady goes to scan my daughter's and it's not coming up. It's coming up as invalid. And so the information hadn't loaded either into her system, or the system was broken, or it was fractured. Because I mean, everybody just threw these tools together in this huge panic, right? So we were standing there, and of course, you know, when you're in that peaking process, you're not always clear because maybe you're on your keto day, or maybe you're on a different, like, maybe you really have to go to the bathroom because you've drank 4 liters of water that morning on the way to the airport. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of things going on, and you're, you know, you're thinking about the contest, and, you know, so this lady says, no, we can't get you your boarding pass because this isn't working. And I said, yeah, but you can see right there on the thing, it says that she had this vaccine. Yeah, but if I can't scan this in, then the system won't recognize it. Then I can't print the boarding pass, or whatever it was. And so I'm starting to get a little frazzled. Yeah. And my daughter looks at me. She's 17 at the time, 16 at the time. She looks at me and she puts her hand up and she goes, listen, I've got this. And she looks at the lady who's checking us in and she says, listen, she says, I don't know what you need to do to get me on that plane. She says, but so far, all you're throwing at me is more problems, and what I need is a solution. So what are we going to do to get me on that plane with my mom? And I was just like, who is this? I was like, who is this human? Right. But like, that is like, that is a direct demonstration of how she has seen me in the past. Mm-hmm. And so I have zero doubt in my mind that your girls see dad in his normal state, because that's normal. That's my life.
Yeah.
Adapting, right? And so you're, by virtue osmosis, they're picking up your problem solving process.
Yeah, and it's I do love that when they have these problem solving. And I think it's just I've very recently my daughter's she's doing a Spanish phrase B, they're calling it, where she's got these certain phrases that she needs to recall, and she got given it around about 4 weeks ago, and she really, she enjoys her Spanish lessons, and out of a list of about 40, she was unsure about 18 of them. I said, okay, well, we can break it down, and we've got 4 weeks to practice, and we'll go through it, and it's time test, and we can, and it'll be a random order as well. And so I was quite daunted to think, oh, okay, can we all do all this? But I said, you've been brave in the first instance to actually participate in the test. That was her voluntary decision, which was amazing. And over the last 4 weeks, we've practiced and practiced and practiced, and we've slowly got, and it's more recognizable, and she's taken it day by day and bit by bit, and she's got it. And what I love is she's given herself that opportunity, and she said, oh, thanks, Dad. Do you really think? And I was like, yeah, but it's not me. It's her work. I said, it's your work and it's your efforts, and you've given yourself this opportunity, and there is a prize if you win. And I said, it's great. I'll be proud whatever you get. But I said, but you've given yourself this opportunity, and she's got that spark, and she's like, actually, I think I can win this. And as I say, it's the opportunity she's given herself, and I love that. I love the fact that she's developing these skills and her own characteristics, and I'll be proud of her whatever result she gets. But it's lovely to see that she's understanding that process, and it'll take her to loads of places, and that's what is really rewarding, is just seeing their eyes light up when they've done something which they think, it's a challenge that they've had. And of course, mixed in with lots of play as well.
Absolutely. Well, you can't take the play away. So talk to me a little bit, we've talked quite a bit about our athletic pursuits and the things that have, really driven our discipline and our resilience. How do you see that personal? Because let me preface this by saying that I think we are a whole person. And I think that as a whole person, what we do in one area of our life spills over into other areas, right? I fundamentally believe how you do one thing is how you do everything. And so when we take that tenacity, the grit, and the discipline that you have in the athletic space, and the resilience and the adaptation and the nurturing in the parenting space, and we combine those together, how do you see that translate into your work and the passion that you have for the things that you do to actually earn the living that you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think in terms of influence, I mean, I had a I got into sales, and had a really, really good mentor in my first job, and there is a recommendation of a book. I think it's How to Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I think that was the book. I was like, oh great, I'm gonna get that. And I remember they said, not many people have gone out and actually bought that book as a part of recommendation. I was like, well, I just want to learn and just kind of fresh into the business, and just kind of just want to pick that up. And again, it was just sharing ideas, learning ideas, and lots of different books. It was amazing what kind of paths that took me down in terms of learning more about sales. So there was Jeffrey Gitomer and sales development. There was going into the personal development space with Jim Rohn, and what I found with Jim Rohn is that there's listen to kind of his seminars and they're almost timeless. And I think we were recorded in the 80s and the 90s, but it's huge relevance today. And really helped me as a person, and that helps into the businesses as well. I kind of merged into the marketing space, through learning different ideas, creativity, and there's so much evolving change within the marketing space, as you know, within the last, well, I could say the last couple of years, but certainly within the last 15, 20 years, it's remarkable the amount of change and opportunity there. And so many people have got ideas and fresh ideas to bring on board. And so I think that's where I've kind of just really developed in that space, is to just try and just always keep learning. I had this attitude when I went to university and I kind of thought, oh great, that's my education done, you know. And it's like, well, it only just begun, you know. There's I thought, I've got to keep reading, I've got to keep learning, just and pick things up. And I've tried to kind of share as much as I can as I got older, but yeah, certainly in my 20s and right, and you know, even now, it's just, you know, just trying to learn as much and to share it where it's appropriate to others as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that aligns perfectly with even one of your first sentiments when we first started talking was, you know, we are a community of lifelong learners. Like when you're in the human space, when you're, you know, marketing or influencing people, or when you're in the bodybuilding space, and it's, you know, we give those informations away because it makes sense for people to want to come and jump into it with us. But, you know, there are segments of people who aren't like that, who are, I'm just going to hold it all to my chest and I'm not going to share with you, and don't share that value system. And, you know, have you come across people like that in your career where, you know, you've come in and you've been trying to influence or participate, and you've had people who have said, no, we're not interested, or you know, to the end of, no, this is my work and you get out of here?
Yeah, I think I have, and I think that's the reason why I've typically worked in smaller organizations. I have looked at, I've had the opportunity to work in bigger organizations, but I felt that just for me, I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but I think just for me, I think if I can ask why is this done this particular way. And I always remember there was one incident in my career where I did ask the question, why has this been done as a team, why do we have to do it like this? And it was, well, that's because that's the way it's always been done. So the ability to ask that question and to go, I've worked really well where I've got the ability and confidence to speak with management and senior leaders and ask them, you know, why is this done in a particular way? And I appreciate, you know, with senior management that there may be certain things which need to be kept at a higher level, but the vast majority of the businesses I've worked for, the management have been very approachable and very willing to share as much and share their experience and reasons why we do as we do. And that was very, very evident at the start of my career and the first business I joined, and now as well, where, you know, I can ask those questions with confidence to say, I've got an idea, or what do you think about this, and why do we do things in a certain way. And I think that's really, I've just had in my experience, it's good to have that ability to ask questions, and not I have the confidence to ask the questions of senior leaders as well, to tap into their experience, and they're more than happy to share their experience because they want you to succeed as well. And I think that's what I found has been really I've had a lot of gratitude for, to be able to share them and help others grow.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think having that psychological safety and the ability to ask those questions in the business world and kind of poke, you know, the way that we've always done things, you know, we refer to those in our business as QWERTYs. And, you know, the QWERTY keyboard was made because back in the day, they would have typewriters and they were all alphabetic. And what would happen was when ladies were typing the telegrams, the keys would get stuck. So they looked at the keystrokes of how our words were actually written, and they organized the QWERTY keyboard so that the keys on the keyboard wouldn't get stuck on the typewriter. But when I look at my cell phone, or when I look at my keyboard for my computer, those keys don't get stuck. So why have we not gone back to alphabetical? Well, QWERTY, it's just what we've always done. So we always do it.
Yeah, and it's, why are they arranging this and where they are? And I thought, well, that's the way it's always has been. So I've seen something recently of just a one-handed keyboard. I'm like, I need to try that. But it's thinking, could I move away from? I mean, I type one-handed, but could I move away from the QWERTY keyboard because that's the way I've always done it? Or could I actually eventually merge onto this one-handed keyboard eventually? But maybe something one to ponder over the next couple of years in terms of like how that would work. But in terms of accessibility, again, that change, someone's gone, there's a better way of doing this. This is a better way to make it more accessible for a community. So let's build it. And, you know, people have done that. So that's been really, really cool to see.
It is. You know, you've said gratitude a couple of times. And so talk to me about your practice of gratitude and how intentional that is. Is it just something that lives inside of you and you just live and operate with a sense of gratitude? Or is it that plus intentional? Or is it just every day you wake up with good intent to express gratitude?
I think it's, I mean, I've gone through periods in my life where, you know, I have had those down days where it's, you know, and you know, there's been a few where, and particularly through scoring challenges and of my disability. But I always remember having a conversation with my daughters about trying to explain, like, you know, what happened when I was born and the fact that it's the left side that was affected. And I always say that, you know, it could have been so different. Yes, it could have been better. I could have not had the disability. I could have had a more advanced form of it. That was a distinct possibility. So I'm always thankful for the doctors managed to save me when they did. So I've tried to have that approach of gratitude that I'm actually here, gratitude that I've got the ability now to do what I do, whether it's bodybuilding, be a dad, you know, there was questions growing up. Could I be a parent? Could I drive? Could I have a job? So every part of those moments when I'm throughout my life, it's very easy to get caught up in my challenges. But I look back sometimes and think, God, aren't I lucky that I've got the ability to be a dad? You know, because my girls, sorry, they my girls make me so proud in terms of how they live their lives. And and just having the opportunities to drive. You know, my wife is like, yeah, you can do this. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. So I drive an automatic car, which over here is there's lots of manuals and it's more difficult to get access to an automatic car. So that's one thing that I didn't think I could do a few years ago. Having access in the gym, just being able to be there. And I've often thought, you know, maybe I don't know what my CP would look like in 20 years. So right this moment, I'm just so thankful for everything I get to do, not that I have to do it, but I get to do it. And that's what I always try to remember in those challenging moments, that I get to do this. I get to have a conversation. This is amazing. If you said 10, 15 years ago, I get to have a conversation with yourself. In different time zones, and I can see you now and talk with you, and we get to have a conversation, and we get to do bodybuilding, and it's wonderful. So I always try to have that in mind when I have those challenges and when I wake up.
The attitude of gratitude is one of the ones that I think it lights me up, and I'm with you. It's every day is a gift, and we're not promised. I mean, we know not when and we know not where. The time will come when we will cease to exist. And the only thing that we have left and that we leave behind is the legacy, the people that we've raised, the families that we've brought into the world, and frankly, the lives that we've touched. Right? The inspirational moments or the hard conversations. And I think that there is so much power in recognizing that we have the responsibility to show up every day and just be great humans.
Yeah, and it's trying to it's trying the approaches that we can take and how do we look at certain situations. And I find a lot of the books Ryan Holiday has done on Stoicism, the Daily Stoic, and the approaches there of it's just been incredible in just in terms of how to live your life and I forget now, but there's just so many aspects of that which I found have really greatly affected me in a positive sense.
I love it. So, Matt, as we wind our time together down, if there was one message that you would leave with our listeners, this global community of people, what would that be?
To go out there and try it, and more often than not, there'll be a way to adapt. Share as much knowledge as you possibly can, because there's a real positive community out there. There are challenges, but as I said with Ryan Holiday, the obstacle is the way, and there is, I always find there is a way. It's just take an approach to try and tackle it and have a go and take a chance and see what happens. And the more things that I've tried to do, and the more things I've tried to have a go at, the some of them don't always work, but because I've had a go, it's led to more opportunities, and I'm very grateful for that. So I might just go and try it and have a go.
I love it. I love it. Matt, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us today here on Pocket Change. This has just been such a wonderful gift. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Kate. It's lovely to see you.
Wonderful. And dear Pocket Change listeners, thank you for joining us. It's been our pleasure for Matt and I to share this conversation with you. And we hope that you've taken something away that is going to inspire and ensure that you bring your best into the world today. As always, if there's any content you'd like to see us feature or anyone you'd like to see us host, reach out. A call doesn't cost a thing.